I can't stop saying boners.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Tim Wick, Nick Glover, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, it's our April Geeky Boners episode. We talk about proofreading, upcoming movies, tabletop gaming, and we say boners a whole lot more than we really need to.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I am your host, Tim Wick, and I am joined, as always, by my co-hosts, Molly Glover.
Hello.
And Nick Glover.
Hey, what's up?
Their last names are the same because they are married, in case you were wondering.
It's true. We're not brother and sister.
Unfortunately.
Because if you were brother and sister, that would just be gross.
It would be pretty gross.
Hot. No, gross.
No, gross. It's only hot on Game of Thrones.
It has been a couple of months since we recorded a boner episode. I think our last boner episode might have been the Oscar boner episode.
I think you're right.
I think you're right. I've got blue balls from having a boner for so long and not being able to talk about it.
We've just had so much other stuff to talk about that we haven't had a boner. Or haven't talked about the
haven't
boner.
Yeah. Boners
have been had.
Our boners have been secretly shame boners.
Secret boners. Secret shame boners.
I don't know why people don't listen to these boner episodes. It's pretty much 30 minutes of talking about boners. But why don't we start with Molly? Molly, what is your geeky boner at the moment?
I am geeking out so hard on proofreading and editing. So seriously.
I'm sorry, I shouldn't laugh.
That is geeky.
It is like my dream job that I would be paid full time to just edit and proofread stuff. I don't care what. Just to find errors and to correct sentences and not edit necessarily like, oh, I think this section should go here and I think that this idea is no good. I like the general editing of the sentences and get restructuring on a very, very micro level. Like, I don't want to redo what someone has said. So that having been said, I got to proofread the entire core rule book for Star Wars Edge of the Empire.
Can
which
you
is
say
coming
that?
I is can.
That, right, it's Lucas coming out. Lucasfilm isn't going to like sue us that you brought that up.
Nope, it's coming out. I can't really talk about what's in it, but I can tell you that it is great. And it's the core book for the new RPG system. We've had the beginner box and the beta book out for a while. And this is just it was 448 pages of proofreading nerd ecstasy. Like, things where it's like, I have to go up on the Wikipedia to find out if usually we have a hyphen between megacorporation or if it's a compound word. And, like, just awesome things like that. And it was super fun. I had a really good time. I get paid freelancing to do it, so it's not, I'm doing it outside of my normal work hours, but I also get paid extra. But that means I worked a 64-hour week last week, and anytime I wasn't at work or doing a show or, you know, at a St. Patrick's Day concert, I was proofreading Star Wars. So it's,
you're totally going cross-eyed proofreading.
Kind of,
Star Wars.
It kind of felt like a Twilight Zone episode where it's like, oh yeah, you like donuts? How about eat all the donuts or something? Like, it got to the point where
asshole.
Yeah, it got to the point where it's like, man, I don't want to proofread. I never thought I'd say that, but I enjoyed it, and I think that it was well received, and I have been offered more jobs already, so I'm really looking forward to
like
it.
Like freelance jobs?
Mm-hmm. I'm
through work?
Through work, yeah, through FFG.
But, you know, for those listening out there that need somebody who's willing to do freelance proofreading.
Yes.
Yeah.
Even, or how about not freelance? If you need somebody, if you have a freelance, or if you have a proofreading, like a salaried proofreading job that you know about that would take someone who doesn't have lot of experience, but really good at it.
Molly at Geeks Without God.
Yeah, because I love it.
So, I without going into too much detail,
sure.
What kind of, because the core rule book is already out, you said, so what?
No, it's, the beta book is already out, which was the, 100-page version of this book. Just the basics of
all
the rules.
All rules, no flavor.
All rules, no setting, no character stuff,
Sure, so it's like, here's the really basic rules of gameplay, not here's how your character can be a Jedi, and here's how your character can be a smuggler, and here's how your character can fly a Millennium Falcon.
Actually, Tim, Jedis aren't in the first court.
They are not in the first book, but you can be Force sensitive. So there's all kinds of really cool stuff, and I implore you that if you are a fan of Star Wars and pencil and paper gaming, that you should absolutely pick it up. And I'm not just saying that because I work in sales.
I believe on the shelf behind us, I probably have the original Star Wars game rule books, which I played maybe twice. I was a big role player in high school and college, and then I had children, and I have not played since.
Tim stopped
being a player when he had kids.
I have this like blessing, like, you know, on Monko, he's always like, it's a blessing and a curse. That's how it is for me with finding errors and things. Mm-hmm. I can't turn it off, and I see them, I find them immediately. Like, I can look at a sentence and I immediately can tell you that there's a problem with it, or if there's a word misspelled or a typo, even just scanning a page, I'll find them.
And there's just a big red light flashing.
Nick will tell you, we'll be watching something, and like it'll come up, and there'll be a misspelling or a mispunctuation or something, and I'll go, aw, that's too bad. Like, it's just, it's like, hey, this is a great movie. Aw, that's too bad. Like, it just instantly kind of ruins it a little bit.
Takes a little wind out of your sails.
Too bad they fucked up the subtitles there.
Right?
Yeah. I took a picture of a sign at the subway last night because it said, ring the doorbell and clearly identify yourself.
Identify
yourself. Yeah. Clearly identify yourself. And I was so thrilled by this. I had to take a picture of it, and the people inside, the sandwich artists, were staring at us like, what are they doing? It's like, I'm identifying your error.
And so I would share it with the world.
So that's my extremely geeky, pedantic, raging nerd boner. So
that's impressive. That's impressive. I don't have one that's nearly impressive. How about you, Nick?
There's a couple things that are, man, movies in 2013 are kind of like, is the long and short of it.
Okay.
But, or 2013, excuse me, Molly.
Yes.
4 months, so, and she's not over it yet.
So it's next Tuesday, we get to see a sneak peek of Evil Dead.
Evil Dead.
Which will have been like 2 weeks ago by the time.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But that's all right. So the point is you're going to see this.
For free and right after work, and it's awesome. So then, today, this week, they showed the movie poster for Ender's Game, and they announced that the trailer for Ender's Game is going to be leading into Star Trek Into Darkness, which I'm also super excited to see. And
I'm pretty excited about that one.
And so, like, Ender's Game, like, okay, I love the books, like, books, even the parallel ones, the ones that come later. I've read them all, but I don't want to give Orson Scott Card any of my money. Because he's a
raging dick fuck.
Yeah,
he's a bigot, and more importantly, he will use that money to further causes.
To continue to be a bigot, and to try and get other people to be bigots.
He lobbies, he funds, he actively attempts to oppress.
It's like you don't. There are people that are assholes that I don't necessarily want to get my money, but I don't feel like they spend their money on being assholes to other people.
Right.
The way that Orson Scott Card spends his money on being an ass to other people.
I kind of like mentioned this online, and a friend of mine was like, you know what? I am confident that we can go see Ender's Game and not pay for it. I have a friend in a movie theater. We'll figure this out. So we're going to get to not only go see Ender's Game, but we're going to go see Ender's Game and not give Orson Scott Card any of our money. Which is even better.
I have a question. This is a slight pronunciation thing. Would you say that it's Ender's Game or Ender's Game? Because
his name is Ender.
Right, I know. So when you think of it, like if you were to tell someone, this is one of my favorite books.
Ender's Game.
Ender's Game.
Yeah.
As opposed to Ender's Game.
No, Ender's Game.
Ender's Game.
Evil Dead, Army Darkness. Or Evil Dead, Star Trek Into Darkness.
Ender's Star Trek Game, Army of Darkness.
Like, that would be the most awesome movie ever.
I'd see that. Like Iron Man 3, like with the extremist stuff. And, like,
Iron Man 3 is looking pretty fucking awesome.
They showed a couple of trailers in it that show like 12 to like 14 different types of armors.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, people on you know, Reddit comic book forum, the subreddit for Marvel Comics on Reddit, are like, oh, that's the Hulkbuster armor. That's Igor. That's the aquatic armor. That's the star armor. Like all those armors are identified from the comics pretty much.
Sure. Yeah, because they do that shit.
And then like, you know, Kick-Ass 2 and like Great Gatsby and Pacific Rim.
Great Gatsby.
Pacific Rim, I've read a couple of people who have seen Pacific Rim who are just creaming
floored.
Your jeans.
It looks
pretty fucking awesome. Monsters and giant robots.
I mean, totally ridiculous, but like I saw a 5-minute clip from G.I. Joe Retaliation that was like 5 minutes of ninja fights, and I was like, holy shit, I want to see a G.I. Joe movie. That was fucking awesome.
I think I saw that same clip, and it's pretty
sweet. They're totally ignoring the previous G.I. Joe movie.
Which is the best thing to do.
Absolutely.
This is where I'm lucky, because I didn't get to watch G.I. Joe growing up at all, because it was about war, so we didn't watch it. But so these movies don't shit on my childhood. I'm able to enjoy them free and clear. and like, people are like, oh, that G.I. Joe movie was so bad. I'm like, yeah, I mean, it was boring, but like, no, you don't understand. Like,
it's not about shitting on your childhood. I mean, no.
For some
on,
people
it's
like, it is.
Either it's a good movie or it's a bad
right.
movie. It's
for
like,
some people
I
it
used
is.
To watch. I used to watch the Transformers cartoons, and I'm not pissed off at the Transformers movies because they fuck with the cartoons. I'm pissed off at them because they're really, really
but
bad
like,
films.
The Transformers movies were bad movies that kind of were honest to the original source material.
Which is kind of bad.
I mean, giant transforming robots that save humanity, etc. I don't feel like they like went against any
it's
of the conventions
true.
Established, and it was still a shit movie, and everyone hated it and said it shat on their childhood.
Except they went to the next one anyway.
Right. Well, like, and two more,
yeah.
I think.
I am also very excited for the movies this year, so I'm glad that you're excited, because I like going to movies, but lately we haven't done much because there haven't been a whole lot of movies that felt need to see in
well,
the theater.
The nerd movie extravaganza for the entire year starts, like, this next week.
Awesome.
And then it just doesn't fucking stop until the end of the year.
There's even some stuff that I haven't heard of that probably isn't very good, but I've seen some trailers for. Like, there's a Tom Cruise End of the World
Oblivion.
Movie.
That
Oblivion.
Looks great.
The trailer looks really interesting.
I like Tom Cruise.
What's
and,
the
then there's a Will Smith End of the World movie,
which looks like
you know, but I still you know, it looks interesting. You know, and
yeah.
I'll give a lot of movies.
There's
like that.
What's his name. Not Ben Affleck, but Matt Damon. There's a Matt Damon, I think, post-apocalypse or, like, super mega corporation future one, too, called Elysium, which I've only seen stills from, but looks really great. He looks like shaved head future punk soldier.
Does Man of Steel come out this year?
Yeah.
I was reading something about that. I hear that's actually looking pretty great. Like,
Of course, they said that about Superman Returns, too.
Superman Returns.
Superman Returns had the best Lex Luthor, like,
Superman Returns,
like, of all time.
I actually talked about the fact that he's an alien and oh my god, I can't do this again.
Well, they lifted a lot of that from...
I don't think Superman Returns is awful. I think Superman Returns is okay.
I thought Superman Returns was better than... I'm not going to say it.
Superman. I got a strong opinion about Superman comics, movies, all of it, and that's that. It's really hard to do a good story about essentially a character that is a god. Superman is an unkillable, perfect person. He's the moral standard. He's, you know, more of a Boy Scout than Captain America. Truth, justice, the American way. He stops bullets. He can fly. He doesn't need to breathe. He's got laser sight and all that shit. And like, to do a movie that's not just someone kidnapping Lois Lane and putting her in danger and he has to save the day, that's, like, the most boring shit ever. In order to do, like, a real good Superman movie, it has to have good, solid writing, and it has to be about the fact that Superman's existence is painful and lonely, and he's the ultimate orphan. And even if he attains that standard of perfection in, you know, truth, justice, the American way, there are people that fucking hate Superman because he was saving the day, he didn't save the day for me. Like, he didn't save my uncle who died in a car crash.
Yeah.
Why? Where was
Superman
then? And, like, the fact that he feels guilty about that shit, like, that is good Superman stories. I don't know. I got a strong opinion about it. Anyway.
Yeah. Superman Returns, I don't know. The only problem I have is Lex Luthor's plot, which was dumb.
But the acting, the actor was perfect.
Yeah, fucking Kevin Spacey, man. Yeah.
He was a great Lex Luthor.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is it Irredeemable? That's the comic that's kind of Superman.
Yeah.
I was reading about it recently. There's a panel where I was reading about it on Reddit where the hero, someone says to him, like, you know, what's it like, you know, like being having these powers and all this power. And he's like, he basically creates this horrible disaster where there's like people are dying, and it's like, you can save 10 people. It's like 10, but there's 1,000. He's like, you can save 10 people. And so the guy gets 10 people onto a helicopter, and they fly away, and then the guy's like, it's like that.
Yeah, it's the...
you know that there's 1,000 people that need you, and you can save 10.
Irredeemable is a Superman pastiche character called the Plutonian, who's essentially Superman, who one day just fucking snaps and becomes the world's most powerful supervillain, and he starts off by, like, destroying an entire country and stuff like that. And so, yeah, what he does is he says... He says, like, I never understood what it could be like. Like, how could you have all that power? Like, what's it like?
Yeah.
There's 1,000 people around them, and he's like, pick 8 to live right now.
And he kills the rest.
And then he just murders the rest right in front of the guy. It's like, that's what it's like.
Yep. Knowing that everyone needs your help, and you can only choose this many, and then knowing that all those deaths are on your head. It's really powerful. That's the thing I like about Superman, is the whole, like, you know, like, he's constantly aware that people need him.
Sure.
And he literally can't be everywhere. And yet he still saves that dumb bitch Lois Lane more than anybody else.
Wants to be everywhere.
Right?
Yeah.
All right, so...
All right.
What about you, Tim?
Pop that boner.
Oh, my geeky boner is actually tabletop gaming. I've been doing a lot of that with the family. We decided this year our sort of New Year's resolution was we were going to try and teach the kids a new game every weekend.
Awesome. Oh, boy.
And that's not something that's happened because...
Sure.
It's a lofty goal.
Life and base. But we've had... I mean, and my kids are 13 and 8, but they're really smart. So, you know, we're playing games that are... The 8-year-old is playing games like Agricola, which is a pretty complicated game.
They're quick learners, too. That's the thing I've noticed with your kids.
And the thing is, that when you start playing more tabletop games, you start recognizing how the rule structures kind of match. So it's really fun to watch them figure out, oh, well, okay, this game is really similar to this other game that we've already played. Okay,
they identify similar mechanics.
I kind of understand the game mechanics of this. The game that the entire family really has been playing a lot is Seven Wonders.
Yeah. That's a great game.
It's a great game. It's super easy to set up. We've got both expansions. We got both expansions for Christmas. So what we've sort of done is added in rules gradually, you know. So we added in the Leaders expansion and played with the Leaders expansion for a while. Mm-hmm. And then we took out the Leaders and we added in the Cities expansion and played with that expansion for a little while. And then we put both of them in at the same time. And then the kids really wanted to play with Side B of the Wonders instead of Side A. So we've sort of been stepping up the difficulty of the games as we go. And then Pat, for her birthday, she wanted to get Lords of Waterdeep. Which Brianne Bilyeu mentioned on her episode as being a game that she really enjoyed. Yeah.
Speaking of Lords of Waterdeep, that is going to be featured on Tabletop soon, which is the game, like, it's a show that Will Wheaton does.
Yeah.
Yep. Uh-huh. And this Saturday, which March 30th, is Tabletop Gaming Day. So if you guys feel like going to the Source on Saturday, they'll be having a lot of events, like, with gaming in the store and stuff like that.
And
so if you have time...
If you're listening to the podcast,
you missed
it, but
I won't. Of course, I'm talking to you. But yeah, But it's Tabletop Gaming has definitely had a big resurgence. Like,
It is really big. And we've kind of been breaking into some of the older games. We have Talisman. We used to play Talisman all the time.
Yeah.
We had all the expansions on that. And of course, now what we really want to do is go back in and break it, because we had everything combined and we played all the fucking time. And we want to actually break it down and start with the base Talisman set and teach the kids that and then sort of add to it.
Do you know what version you have? Do you have the I'll just see, because you may need a new version. Depending on how long it's been.
Oh, it's a really old version.
Yeah.
I heard an interesting theory recently about board game resurgence, and the guy's theory for one of the reasons he thought that there was a resurgence is that it's a in the land of, you know, games with subscription fees and like having to pay monthly fees for data access or for all sorts of things.
Beating video games,
downloadable content, lots of add-on purchases for games. It's a one-time fee that you buy, and there you can play it with any of your friends that you want.
Yeah.
You can share it very easily. You can lend it out, which you can't do with like a lot of digital content. And so, like, there's a value placed in that.
I mean, when we talk about OmegaCon, and we're going to be doing OmegaCon Spring in a couple of weeks, and that convention, it's what's called a Relaxicon. You just sort of hang out. But I mean, one of the things that happens there is a lot of tabletop gaming, and there.
Yeah.
I picked up a lot of games there that I brought home to play with the family. You know, the one thing I'll say about Lords of Waterdeep, Pat got it for her birthday. We played it on her birthday. The really nice thing about that game is super scalable. It's 2 to 5 players, and we've played it with 4 with the entire family. Then we played with 3, and Pat and I have played it with 2. And I've found that the playability doesn't suffer.
Oh, that's nice.
Does the strategy and gameplay change?
Absolutely. The strategy changes because what it does, it plays a lot like Agricola. So if you played Agricola, you have a certain number of players that you have to make moves in a turn. And you got to be really careful about which moves you choose to make because you only get a certain number of moves per turn. And, of course, once one person chooses a particular action, nobody else can do that action.
Ah, right.
So Lords of Waterdeep is the same way. Once you choose a particular action, other people can't choose that same action. But the fewer people there are, the more actions each person gets.
Okay.
So the strategy does change a lot because, say, when you're playing with 4 people, each person only gets 2 actions per turn. With 2 people, each person gets 4 actions per turn.
I like that.
So it has been literally... Since we've gotten the game, there are nights where Pat and I will look at the clock and it'll be like, we know that we can play a 2-person game in about an hour. And if it's 11 o'clock at night, we'll have that look in our eye that's not do you want to do it?
But it's I'm familiar with this look. Do you want to play a game?
Do you want to play this game? So
I'm sorry?
Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, if you could play any board game, like, over and over, like, is there one that you would, like, pick that you just, you know, you don't get sick of playing it, like, just nothing?
Oh, that's a good question. There's a game called Endeavor that I really enjoy and can play over and over again. It's a turn-based game. I like the trend of the games that are like, you know, you got 8 turns, and then you're done. It's not like playing until somebody gets you know, the most points. It's a game where you're basically merchants expanding from the European market into all the corners of the globe, and you're gathering goods and you're building buildings that help you get more moves in a turn, and I've really enjoyed that. The other game that we play a lot, because it's different every time, is Dominion.
That's the Penny Arcade Gamers versus Evil is like Dominion in that it's a deck builder where you put out the piles and you're buying the cards to make your deck that you're then, you know, playing. Mm-hmm. And we play that a lot. We also, there's an iOS version for iPhone that we play all the time. Like, it's just constantly.
iPhone. And you can play online with friends simultaneously or, like, turn-based, so you get little pop-up notification when it's your turn.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And I think you guys... We'll bring that to Omega Spring.
Yeah. We'll play it. Yeah.
The phone and iPad version is exactly the same as the card game version. Mm-hmm. And I would say it's like Dominion, but, like, maybe a little bit easier to pick up.
Uh-huh.
But also more wacky hijinks fun. Cool. Like, there's lots of...
It's Penny Arcade humor.
There's lots of, like... fucking over your friends or like, and the strategy totally changes if you're playing like 2 people versus like 3 or 4 people. Totally different game. Mm-hmm. Totally different game.
There are very few games that scale, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, there's often, they'll say, well, you can play with this many to this many players, but usually the ideal number is 3 or 4.
Well, that's Board Game Geek. I mean, when they are doing a rundown of the game, one of the things they do is like, how many players is it? And then, what's the ideal number of players?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Then, because they're 2 totally different things.
Well, like games like Battlestar Galactica, the board game, if you only have 4 people or 5 people, it's not nearly as fun as if you have 8. You know, it's depending on...
That's one that's like, the more people, the better.
Arkham is another one.
Resistance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Also, shout out to Fantasy Flight. The other game that we've been playing a lot is the new X-Wing combat game.
Yeah, you love it?
It's sweet. I picked up the Millennium Falcon.
It's huge, isn't it?
It's so awesome. I've got the Millennium Falcon. It blows up shit. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty. It's to scale, so it's huge. It's the size of my hand. Like,
it's great because, I wasn't thinking about it that. Mm-hmm. I figured it would be the same size as the X-Wings and the Y-Wings that we already have. But then you pick it up and like, no, it's got to be bigger.
Do you have Slave 1?
No, I don't have Slave 1 yet. I don't have Slave 1. But I will... I don't have Vader's TIE Fighter, which actually...
The TIE Advanced?
The TIE, because the trick is...
No, TIE Advanced.
The trick is that you gotta play the... It's really hard to play the Millennium Falcon against, like, 2 TIE Fighters. Because, like, the best pilots on the two TIE fighters just barely match the worst fighter on the Millennium Falcon.
Oh. Yeah, that's pilot skill really comes into play with that kind of stuff.
So but if you get the more advanced TIE fighter, then the pilot skill increases and suddenly you can actually play like fucking Han Solo, and I really want to play Han Solo.
Have you seen the like pictures of people online doing like 100 ship
They do 100 point tournaments all the time. And so like they're not 100 ships, but it's 100 points usually. Like I think, and I'm going to get it wrong, but like the Millennium Falcon's probably like a 40 or 50 point ship. So right. It's like, you know, you yeah, but pilot is what changes.
Matt Baxter, I think, posted on Facebook. They had like a star map, like a space field print that they laid down to play on, and they each side had maybe I want to say like 20 or 30 ships.
That's crazy.
Yeah,
that's probably 100.
They said it was. It's big. I think it ended up being like a 10-hour game.
Yeah, that's the kind of shit we do during the demos, like we were talking about with Matt Sevical in that episode recently, where we up above Gen Con we have the demos and they do X-Wing tournaments and they do them in brackets and they bring it all down to the last two and it's amazing.
I dig that game. I think it's really fun. You know, the design of the ships is great.
Yeah. Yes, that's
Devin, my youngest, is totally obsessed with Star Wars, and he's obsessed with the classic stuff. He doesn't like the new stuff at all. So
good job.
I taught him right. So the nice thing about that game is it's pretty much all the classic ship designs, and he's the Y-wing is his favorite. So it was super awesome that one of the first expansion pieces they came out with was a Y-wing.
That's awesome.
I saw a on Fantasy Flight's website, like a Death Star map or something like that. Like maybe you guys might have had it for a demo or something like that.
Oh, when we went to New York Toy Fair, we had a vinyl like printout that we were using just as a demonstration. It's not anything that's actually like being released as that we've announced or anything. It's just like a vinyl mat that we were using for that. But so we've considered the possibility, obviously, of putting something like that. I have no idea.
I'm excited for new ships. I would, you know, if anybody from Fantasy Flight besides my co-host is listening, you know what would be cool is to do an expansion. Like a Hoth expansion where you can actually do the AT-ATs and the snow speeders. Fighting each other.
Land fights.
It's a flat plane. There's no reason you couldn't do ground as well as air, really.
You can do ground because it doesn't, and you know, doing a three-dimension would be a pain in the ass. So.
Well, we do, we do, because there's rules for the starships as to where when they come when they hit each other, that you just say, oh, well, you know, we just move them
because it's three-dimensional space.
You just assume that the pilot wouldn't crash his spaceship into a spaceship if there's literally 1,000 other directions he can go.
You think you could avoid them somehow.
Yeah. That's so awesome. Anyway, I'm glad you like it. It's one of my favorites that we do, so.
Yeah, so I could totally geek out about this because we've been playing a lot of games and it's been fun, but we should probably move on to our five questions.
Questions, all right.
So where do our answers come from today?
Today our answers come from Josh Helton, who wrote in, and I will play the part of Josh Helton.
All right. I don't think we know Josh. I think Josh is just a listener.
I believe
loyal
so.
Listener. That's great.
He gives no introduction and no closing. So he just straight up, he is all business.
He's all business, yeah.
What is the best movie that Josh saw in the last 30 days at the time that he sent in this email?
Safety Not Guaranteed.
Awesome.
Not Guaranteed.
I want to see that.
I really want to see it.
Yes, I do too.
That's the movie, for those of you who don't know, that's the movie. It's based on a real Craigslist ad that said, you know, looking for a person to come time travel with me, like must have own, like
gun, isn't it?
Yeah. Safety Not Guaranteed. And it's, and
I've only done this once before.
I've only done this once before. And so this, they wrote a movie like on that premise of someone answering the ad. It's not what happened. You know,
did Josh say anything about the movie?
He said, that's all he said, was that he saw that, just that he liked that movie.
He's a man of few words, and I appreciate
it's
that.
It's April from Parks and Rec.
Right.
And it's the dude from, I think it's... Is it,
I like her.
Is it the dude from New Girl? Is it Nick from New Girl? I don't know.
I
don't know. It's a bunch of people.
I gotta check and see if that's streaming. That might be.
That's
my next movie
I really want to see that.
I want to see that.
If that's your next movie pick, we will be here.
Second question is, who's your favorite atheist character?
Perry Cox from Scrubs. He's intelligent, brash, and caring. You can tell deep down he really does appreciate JD and wants to take him under his wing, but has to keep his image up.
I would say he's a brilliant science dick.
Yeah, yeah. I would also add that I feel like he does appreciate JD and wants to take him under his wing, and that's what he's doing. And maybe it doesn't feel that way.
Part of keeping him at a distance is so that he can remain objective and teach him the lessons he needs.
I really don't think that he keeps JD at much of a distance. I think he keeps him as close as he keeps anybody. I mean, really, he doesn't, if you think about it, he doesn't
that,
really let all
that of That episode in. With Brendan Fraser is like, it's a heartbreaking moment in television.
We've seen all of Scrubs. When we were first dating, we watched it a lot. We had the DVDs, and that's all we did.
And then it got turned to shit, and we stopped.
Yeah, no, we watched all the way through.
Good timing.
Yeah.
Scrubs is a show that I have not watched.
The first few seasons are really good.
I like Zach Braff.
Yeah.
And it just, you know, you make
choices. Do you like medical stuff? Like medical
not
shows?
Not that much.
I don't either. Yeah.
It's like I never watched ER. It just never appealed to me. And Grey's Anatomy does not appeal to me at all.
Grey's Anatomy is for ladies. I wouldn't watch. I don't want to watch that show.
Oh, my wife likes Grey's Anatomy.
Your wife's a lady.
It's true. So, all right. Question number three is: what is your geekiest hobby?
Josh Helton. A tie between painting War Machine minis and being a nerdcore aficionado.
All right.
I'm assuming he means the MC Frontalot and the
MC Chris,
MC Lars.
Yeah,
MC Lars.
Sure.
MC Ice, get more. No, MC Ice, get more ice.
I think friend of the show Matt Alex would be.
Yes.
Be very into the nerdcore.
I can't remember the name of the dude that's.
Mark Fogland Patton.
Yeah, no, it's I can't. It's not worth.
All right.
I can't remember it. So.
But that's good. I also appreciate nerdcore. They recently on the King of the Nerds show. One of the challenges was they had to come up with a nerd anthem, and their judges were MC Frontalot and then Garfunkel and Oates, which are maybe not nerdcore, but definitely like
nerd
music
nerd
for
music,
sure.
Yeah.
So it was really, and they did it. Both teams did kind of a rap thing. It was.
I keep getting told if I want the Dregs to get big, I have to write a Star Wars song. Apparently that's the key. If you write a Star Wars song. And you're in if it's a good Star Wars song,
you're in. Jets.
Yeah,
exactly.
Awesome.
So question number four is, what is your favorite sandwich?
My favorite sandwich, I have named the Fred Gwynn. Throw some deli-sliced ham lunch meat on a flat griddle to get it warmed up. Butter two slices of sourdough bread and put a slice of Munster cheese on each. Mm. Set each piece of bread on the griddle like you're making a grilled cheese. When the cheese starts to melt, put the ham in the middle and close it up. Fred Gwynn was the actor who played Herman Munster. My ham and Munster needed a geeky name, and that seemed to fit. That's fucking hilarious.
That's awesome.
I am forever calling a ham and cheese a Fred Gwynn. That's fucking amazing.
Let's see if we can get that meme going out into the internet.
I love it.
That actually sounds like a really good sandwich.
Oh my gosh.
I gotta say.
That's great. I love Munster cheese. Munster cheese is all over my business. All
right, so last question. What is the stupidest thing anybody's ever said to you about your atheism?
I used to live in Kansas and had a personalized license plate that said atheist on it. Interjection. Damn, that's awesome. All right.
Gutsy move.
Well, walking out of McDonald's one day, somebody yelled that I was going to hell and then spit on my car. I guess he really showed me.
Wow.
Yeah.
Spit on the car.
Wow. Atheist license plate. I wonder if someone has that in Minnesota.
Somebody must.
I don't know.
Judge not lest ye be judged unless you're spitting on an atheist car.
Yeah,
that's
fine.
Cool.
Well, no, that's the thing, though, because...
I got to tell you, though, go look for... Because the most amazing thing is when you sit there and you say to a Christian, a certain flavor of Christian, what about the fact that Jesus said, judge not lest ye be judged? What they will do is they will come up with an explanation how what they're doing is not that.
Yep.
Or, when you say, judgment is mine, saith the Lord. They're like, well, that's not what God meant.
No. They're witnessing, Tim. They're just trying to save you. They're not judging you. They're just...
Not only that, but being an atheist is literally the only unforgivable sin. Like, it is
true.
The only sin you can commit that is completely unforgivable to any sect of Christianity, that you will not go to heaven, period. If you're on your, if you murder a million people and then at the end you accept Christ into your heart and you're all like, I repent and everything.
Like general butt fucking naked.
That's fine. But if you commit the sin of not believing, then that's the biggest one.
It doesn't even matter if you decide you believe later.
To
you're
them,
still fucked.
To them, they are, you know, I mean, I'm sure they see it as like you are worse than Hitler, and they are.
They're doing you a solid.
I mean, you saw.
By spitting on your car.
We saw the death threats that atheists got on Twitter when Hitch died, and everyone, and the hashtag good without God was trending, and people were like, all these fucking atheists, I hope they die, like, I'll send them to hell, and then they'll see God's real. It's like, anyone who's an atheist I see, I'm gonna shoot in the face, because that's what I do, because I believe in Jesus, fool. And it's like...
And you're like... Yeah,
I mean, it was amazing.
Who the fuck is this Jesus guy that you believe in? Because it doesn't look like the guy that I've read about.
National media outlets were reporting on like the insanity of that. But
it was
anyway,
so bad that they actually got attention.
Yeah.
Hey, mad props for having...
Yeah, Josh Helton. Yeah, that's awesome.
Right. Josh, you're awesome. Okay, if you want us to read your answers to our 5 questions on the air eventually, please send it in to 5questions@geekswithoutgod. Of course, you can also send an email to any of us individually if you wanted to just chat.
Yeah, always.
Tim, Molly, or Nick at geekswithoutgod.
Tim likes nude pics. So
yeah. Especially of ferrets.
Naked ferrets, like just bone naked.
Slutty naked.
Just like draw me like one of your French ferrets, like that. Like
speaking
of French girls.
Speaking of geeky boners, yeah. Oh my God, my wife's gonna listen to this. All right. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great week or month or whatever the hell. We'll talk to you later.
Bye. Yours in Christ.
Thanks to Tim Wick and Jeffrey Brown for our theme song, Geeks Without God.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging and look at past podcasts at www.geekswithoutgod.com. And be sure to follow us on Twitter at Geeks Without God.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
Do you like my half wampa, half unicorn? Because I can't draw horse legs.
Wampacorn.
Wampacorn.